Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. And a beautiful Shabbat it is. Hey, what do you think of this a cappella team and what a wonderful job they're doing today? Aren't they great? I'm telling you, we are really getting there. I'm very grateful to all of you young men and women in particular who really are making it happen. It's very gratifying from my angle, and I'm just worshiping, you know? Okay, so today we want to continue our series on what exactly is happiness, and how do you get it from a Messianic Jewish standpoint? And what we pointed out is we're not into some kind of self-help modality. You know, you could read a million books out there in Barnes & Noble about happiness and things to do and things don't do. But we're looking at it from a very particular perspective, and that is a Messianic Jewish perspective, where God and Messiah figure very prominently in the equation of what exactly happiness is, and how do you get it? And the first insight that I have repeated several times is that happiness in Jewish thinking is a mitzvah, it's a commandment, it's a kind of necessary thing, because it's very difficult to follow God consistently and walk in His ways if you're not happy. But if you're happy, if that's your disposition toward life, and if your happiness is rooted in the things that really make for happiness, then you have a level of motivation to do the right thing, even when it's hard, and you have the motivation to experience the joys of community life and of living in terms of the kinds of things that are sacred. So the idea, again, is not just a kind of self-absorbed message of self-help, self-improvement, etc. It may echo some of those insights, and what we talk about does echo some scientific insights and others, as we'll talk about, but fundamentally the issue is one of following God as a Messianic Jewish community. But we are grateful for people who have really studied the issue of happiness, and we pointed out in the 1990s, there was the beginning of a whole discipline of psychologists who wanted to study what are the common denominators among people who just are happy. Can we distill them? And one particular fellow I've been reading, a fellow named Seligman, came up with a very nice acronym for those things that really make you happy. And he called it PERMA, like in permanent, P-E-R-M-A, the five keys to happiness: positive emotions, engagement, that is when you do something to be really present in what you're doing, relationships, meaning, and achievement. So we've talked about the first two, positive emotions. We've talked about that. How important it is, if you're going to be happy, to choose to make decisions which tend toward just being to feeling positively about things. And I will quote the Ruach Israel prophetess, Diane Cohen. Not an official title, but you know what I mean. I mean, she, a prophet, speaks forth the word of God in a compelling way, and a prophetess does the same. I will quote from her weekly Shabbat message from yesterday. And here's what she said: as I push out from my spirit that which wants to drag me down, how much better equipped to handle what lies ahead. Wow, what a profound insight. And so there are choices to be made about what you do the first thing in the morning when you get up, what you listen to. She was talking about a particular TV station that's, you know how TV stations are. You never read about Frontline News, a terrific new hospital was built, right? No, you read about what was destroyed, who's unhappy, who's miserable, who got killed, et cetera, because that's what seems to sell, but it is not necessarily going to produce positive emotions. And what we talked about in the context of Messianic Jewish life is getting here early enough for the music. Oh, what great music! Forget about it. We have phenomenal music at Ruach, and if you enter into the music and allow the emotions to just rise within you that the music is conveying, you'll find it tends toward happiness. So we talked about that. And we also talked a couple of weeks ago about engagement. Engagement. This means, quite simply, losing yourself in things that are worthy. A superficial example, when I'm practicing my flute, there are times, doesn't happen all the time, but I'll look up and 2 hours has gone by and I've had such a ball. Can you relate to that at all? Are there things you love to do that you go, wow, where did the time go? Well, that's engagement. An example that's more germane to our lives together is, again, entering in as we worship. I've talked to some of our worship leaders who do such a terrific job, but I said we have to really think about when we lead worship to make sure we don't go too fast and that we don't go too slow. We have to be a little bit like Goldilocks and the porridge. Not too hot and not too cold. When we lead, it's so important that we lead in such a way that as you read a phrase, as you're praying a phrase, that you have a moment to enter into those words and go, yeah, I got a picture about that. And we don't want to go too slow and to be laborious, but we don't want to be rushed through things so much that you and we and all can't enter in. It's all part of engagement. And so Seligman says that engagement is a key to happiness, to choose to enter into things deeply rather than out of fear or distraction or whatever unworthy mechanism we don't enter in. Okay, so all of that by way of review. Today, I'd like to talk about the R in PERMA, which stands for relationship. And this week and next week, I'll cover this subject. This week, we want to talk about relationship with God and how critical it is to the deepest levels of happiness. Now, let's be real. There are people who go through life in a happy way who don't know a thing about God, but I think that those people are in a vulnerable position because when stuff happens that you don't like and you don't expect and it's serious stuff, you want to have a resource beyond just things are nice in order to root your happiness. If happiness is just rooted on the circumstances of life, and I love this word, tell me if you love this word, vicissitudes. Isn't that a great word? It just sounds great. It sounds so classy. What it means is just the ups and downs of life, the vicissitudes of life. If happiness is rooted in just circumstances, I'm telling you, you're in a very, very vulnerable position. If happiness is rooted in God, then you're in a much, much stronger position. So I'd like to talk with you a little bit about happiness rooted in God. It's a huge subject, but I'm just going to touch pretty much one particular aspect. Number one, I think it's a miracle that God wants to relate to us at all. You know what I mean by that? What are we? We're tiny. And the more science explores the extremities of the universe, the bigger it seems to get. And I heard one fellow talk about this the other day who said that when you look into space, say you're an astronaut, you see little twinkling lights and they surround you and they're far more than anything we can experience on the Earth. He said, you think each of those lights is a star. He says, in many cases, it's not stars. It's galaxies, each of which are made up of billions of stars. I mean, it is big out there. So the fact that God would want to relate to us is an amazing thing. So let's think in Messianic Jewish terms about laying tefillin. We don't talk about laying tefillin too much, but you know, tefillin. It's the fulfillment of the command in the Vayahavta to put the Lord's word as frontlets before our eyes and to bring them very close to his commands very close to our heart. And so tefillin, and I should say parenthetically, that there are examples of tefillin that go back to the days of Yeshua. Archaeologists have discovered that wearing tefillin, is something that goes way back. So I love to lay tefillin. I just love it. And there's a particular point in laying tefillin that is the highest point, the zenith of the couple of minute experience. And it's when I wrap around my finger three times and then take the strap to form the letter shin. Now here's a question for you. What does the letter shin stand for? Does anybody know? What do you think? Shaddai or who? God, exactly. El Shaddai, the Almighty is how that word is normally translated. So forming a shin, it's like God says, I'm putting my mark on you. You belong to me and I belong to you. And as we're saying this, we're quoting from the book of Hosea, and it says, V'yadata Adonai Eloheka, and you shall know the Lord your God, and you shall know. And that word know means a deep kind of knowing, yada. It's just not like cognitive knowledge, it's much deeper than that. And I love that moment of laying tefillin because I feel that sense of relationship with him. And I know some of you have shared this experience. And if you're Jewish, this is a mitzvah, and etc. So laying tefillin, wow. Now how about this? You want to talk about relationship with God. How about Yeshua's comment to his followers shortly before his death? I call you friends. What do you think of that one? Is that the greatest? Here the Mashiach, the eternal Mashiach, who comes into the world as a Jew, as a human being in every respect, as Stacy pointed out earlier, and he comes into the world, and he does all these amazing miracles, and he's about to experience this titanic trial of his own execution, but then to be followed by his resurrection and ascension. And this magnificent person who was with God from the beginning says to a bunch of regular guys, you know, who wash football and whose wives get mad at him for not cleaning up the counter, and just like us, and he's a guy, but also he can identify with every woman in the world too, because of his, just because of who he is. And he says to his followers, I call you my friends. Relationship. That is what God is all about. And the fact that he wants to do that with us is terrific. But there are some big challenges, and I want to describe one big challenge to you and touch on a possible way forward for solving it. More than a possible way, I think it's a very, very good way. But a lot of people, and maybe you can relate to this, are afraid even to think deeply about relating to God because of the bad things that happen in this world, and therefore perhaps could happen to you or me. And by the way, we are not immune to life's challenges. We know that. But some people say, I don't know about relating to God because there's evil in the world, and it stops me from desiring any kind of intimacy or relationship. Now, this is not an abstract thing. I was on the phone with a friend, a very knowledgeable friend, a friend who's actually a college professor, a seminary professor, and this friend was saying to me, you know, I have a lot of trouble trusting God and relating to him, because when I was living in Israel during the time of those terrible knife attacks, remember those a couple of years ago? It's a tough time. And what we had is some radical people taking out a knife in the middle of Tel Aviv, different places, and trying to kill people. And my friend said there was a knifing when I was living there of a two-year-old girl, and we have a two-year-old girl, and she was killed. And how could I trust God given the fact that these things happen? And they could happen to me. Now, I think we could just in a kind of facile way say, well, listen, you know, I don't have an answer. I don't have anything to say about that. But I think there are things that could be said about it. And to the extent that you're wanting and seeking and desiring and pursuing a relationship with God gets hung up on this very real issue, problem of evil in the world, I want to speak to you for a few minutes, and I want to suggest a way forward. And this is going to be the only major point I want to make about this today. There's so much that could be said. And the first thing about this that I want to say, first specific, is the answer lies in a way of thinking. And it has to do with saying yes to a concept, which I think is an utterly defensible concept. And here it is. You ready for it? Here it is. That the world and the universe is far bigger than we imagine. And that God's, a corollary to that, that God's wisdom is far greater than we perceive. I'll say it again. That the world is a much more complex and bigger place than we imagine, and that God's wisdom is far greater than what we might imagine. This becomes really, really important. And I do want to stress the thinking aspect, not the feeling aspect. Now, this is very important. It's very difficult to control how you feel. I'll give you a test. I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, and then I want you to all be angry. Ready? 1, 2, 3, go. Well, it's hard to control feelings. Feelings come and go, they go up and down. If it's nice out, I feel this way. If, blah, 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 blah. If I don't get morning coffee, don't ask. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I'm not the only one around here. I know that. I know you. Okay. But thinking, which is somewhat undervalued in our society because we have been propagandized into thinking that feelings are the only real validating reality. It's not true. But we can choose to what we think about and therefore what we do. And I want to challenge the idea that we have an adequate handle on reality so that we are in a position to stay away from a relationship with God because of the difficulties, the real challenges, the real problems that we see in the world, including things that happen to little children, even at times. I know that's a tough subject, but look, I think we have to be real about this. The idea is to believe, this is a very rational and very true idea, that we don't know a lot about what's going on when any particular thing occurs, good or bad. We don't know ultimate outcomes of people all the time. We don't know how God is using something for His ultimate purposes, even if it's something that He wished didn't occur. What do you think? God likes it when bad things happen? We have to develop a kind of higher rationality, I'll call it, or a higher level of thinking, which says, sure, that was a tragedy. I'm not going to deny it. But I'm not going to avoid the God of Scripture and the God of our tradition because I don't like what happened and because of what could happen to my kid or any other set of imagined causal relationships. No, that's not the way to go forward. The way to go forward is to bend the knee before a God who's a lot smarter than you, who knows the end of the beginning, who promises a very good and happy end, and along the way, stuff happens, and we don't always have explanations, but one explanation is not, or one result is not, to stay away from relationship with God because of these things that occur. I mean, at very least, we can get a handle on this. How many good things occur that we don't even think about? How many kisses and hugs around the world? How many people who really know how to love each other? How many disasters did an angel prevent from happening that you're not aware of and I'm not? You see how the world's a bigger place? It's a very big place. And the universe is a very big place. And so I want to encourage us all to not allow the problem, and the technical term for it is theodicy, if you want the technical theological term, the ways of God's justice in the world, just have the humility to recognize we don't always know the story. In fact, we usually don't know the whole story. And it may seem counterintuitive. It's not that moving into this space of a kind of, hey, listen, God's God, I'm me, I don't know. That should not and will not necessarily or shouldn't at all motivate us from doing good and preventing evil, because we're motivated in the depth of our being by an awareness, not just an awareness, but in a relationship with a God who's teaching us how to live and how to make a difference and how to do the right thing and how to mitigate some of the evil in this world. But I'm telling you, my friend right now is immobilized, afraid to relate to God, afraid to walk deeply in prayer, afraid to believe that He'll heal anybody, afraid, and my friend is depressed. Now, it could argue that there's, and probably is, a kind of circular feedback here. The depression could be informing this person's philosophy, but I think it can go the other way as well. That the depression is a result of losing the big wow. That there's a terrific God who loves to answer prayer, who's there, who's working, and even when we don't know what's going on, He is at work step by step, inch by inch, without making a mockery of human freedom, but yet bringing about His good ends. And that's the kind of God I want to encourage us all to have relationship with. Happiness comes from cultivating positive emotions, comes from real engagement and building relationships with God first. And when you relate to Him this way, you have the eyes to see His care, His love, His goodness. And when you begin caring about relationship with God first, then that naturally takes you into healthy and good relations with others, which are the continuation of our story about how to be really happy people. Next week, Shabbat Shalom.
Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those who know your name and study your Torah. For Messiah.